We thought today we'd bring you an aviation special. There are a couple of things that are happening in the news with regards to that. Looks like Qatar Airways are looking for to apply to increase flights to Australia. And this time the airline has got a lot more support for gaining those extra flights. And meanwhile, Qantas is confident of its plan to launch direct flights to Europe and the US in 2026. They reckon this remains on track despite ongoing manufacturing delays at Airbus and Boeing. But the thing that captured our attention that we wanted to explore with your next guest, James Nixon, who's a writer, he's a retired pilot. He flew for Emirates and ANSET. James, I'm so glad you're here with us.
It's my pleasure.
It's a bit bumpy.
It is a bit bumpy.
It's a little bit bumpy. I note that a week ago there was turbulence on a Qatar Airways flight to Dublin. Australia's had its own incident with turbulence with the flight, the Singapore Airlines flight, where sadly someone lost their life, had a heart attack during it, as you could. I mean, it's scary turbulence. It's being put down to climate change.
They're dreaming. There's a few reasons for turbulence. Can I quickly go through them?
Please do.
Number one's wake turbulence. That's the wake that comes down from big, heavy aeroplanes above you. Comes down at 500 feet per minute. And because there's so many planes, there's like 9,800 of them up there right now.
Yeah.
There's so many planes on the same airways and the ones 1,000 feet above and 1,000 feet above that. The air descending is spinning and it's really, really dangerous if it hits you. So pilots are always looking to make sure that they can avoid the wake turbulence from airplanes above, especially the A380, which is the biggest of them all.
So are you saying because there's increased traffic in the sky, that's why there might be more turbulence?
Well, more turbulence encounters. That's correct, yes. And so in the A380, we're very mindful of which way the wind's blowing and which way the wind, our wake, is going down underneath us. And so we quite often offset the airplanes 1, 2, 3 nautical miles right of track so that we don't affect the people below. And the air traffic controllers do an amazing job because they, every time they're planning the planes moving around the airport terminal area, they're making sure that the wake doesn't affect the planes below it. It's really, really tricky because it's all invisible and it's all 3D.
Oh, yeah. And it's all physics.
And if you don't pay attention, and if you're playing on your phone or you're reading a book and you're not looking out the window and planning for this and looking at the weather radar and the TCAS radar, which is the radar that shows you up to 60 other airplanes around you in a big force field bubble, then you could run into this turbulence and cause the sort of damage, which I'm pretty sure is the reason for the Qatar turbulence. We go charging up through Iraq in a big long line, and once we get to the Turkish border and we go to Ankara ATC, we all split off in different directions to go to various places around Europe. And that's pretty much where this occurred.
It's like a T-intersection.
Yeah. Well, it's more than that.
More than T,
it's like
isn't it?
They just go every direction. So you go Czechoslovakia,
I'm Czech interested.
Slovak, or you go towards France, or you go towards Madrid, you know. So all these planes going in different directions from that location. And there's people crossing airways.
And it's different altitudes.
Different altitudes. And I reckon these guys in the 787 had that problem. But just let's talk about that for a second. You've damaged people, you've damaged cabin crew, and you don't divert to Istanbul underneath you. You then take broken passengers and cabin crew all the way to Ireland and then ask for an ambulance to meet you at Ireland.
Why was that though? Was that because they didn't want to land in Turkey?
It's because of the accountants are running this business and the MBAs are running this industry. It's cheaper. The airlines under IATA, which is the club for airlines, and they're meeting right now in Dubai, which is why we're getting these airline stories out at the moment. The club of airlines has a deal. They either take you back to where you started from and chuck you out on the streets in Sydney Airport and say, find your own way home.
No.
Or they take you to your destination. If they take you and break the journey and divert to Istanbul in this case, or someone's come from Tasmania and gone to Sydney Airport to get on the plane to go to overseas, once they've taken you on the first coupon, the first sector of your flight, they have to look after you. So that means they have to put you accommodate you.
Once they've broken the flight.
Once they've broken that contract.
So they don't want to land in Istanbul.
They'll because always they want you to go home. As Jetstar has done numerous times on the way to Bali. Remember that? Like they're 3 hours out. Why don't you go to Adelaide? Oh, no, we're going to bring you back to Melbourne. Well, why would you do that?
Because they don't want to pay for your accommodation.
Because they don't want to pay for your accommodation or looking after you or feeding you.
They don't want to set the precedent.
It's run by accountants, this whole industry now. And page two of the Sun today, there's a big thing about they're trying to tell us that if you drink alcohol in planes, it's going to be bad for your hearts. So airlines are going to start limiting the amount of alcohol to save people's hearts. Yeah, really?
Really? What is that for?
To save money.
Right.
I mean, how many people drink more than one or two drinks anyway on a flight?
Only Rod Marsh, and he's not here anymore.
No, because he drank David 500. Booney. Yeah, Booney had 50.
But they don't do that anymore.
No.
Because these young athletes don't do that.
They're trying to get the cabin crew to feed you more than five drinks on a flight to London. You're lucky.
James Nixon is with us. We're just getting an insider's understanding of what's going on in the airline industry at the moment. So this club that's meeting at the moment, is that like a secret kind of?
No. There's two clubs. It's like the Formula One.
Okay.
So that you have the IATA. This is called IATA. But they have United Nations that run the airline industry, and that's called IATA.
Okay.
Right. So they're the ones who make all the rules that we fly to, which is really tricky because if you're flying over multiple countries, someone drops dead on a plane, where do they drop dead? Do they drop dead at the point of departure or over Vietnam? And do you have to report to the Vietnamese coroner? There's all these dramas. So the United Nations sorts that out with this mob called ICAO. The International Civil Aviation Organization.
Okay.
And they run the industry. They're the regulators. And then you have, that's like the FIA in Formula One. And then you have the Formula One Constructors Association, which is the club of all the manufacturers. And they're the ones who put on the TV broadcast and they're the one who put on the show. They're the circus providers. Well, we have about 130 main airlines around the world who are members of IATA. And their head is Willie Walsh, who used to be the head of British Airways. It's a funny name, isn't it?
It is.
And Aer Lingus, and he was a 737 pilot many years ago. He's the boss of IATA.
And is he as powerful as Bernie was in Formula One?
Yes, exactly the same.
Really?
He's exactly as
powerful. And how long has he been there?
Well, since he left British Airways. So quite a while, about 3 or 4 years now.
Yeah.
And he's the one who's in charge of IATA, and they're making up all these rules now to make themselves look after themselves. But when you were talking to Joe Prowse before about
being an ANSET flight attendant,
there was something that you're talking about that I'm going, hang on, no, that's not right. It's IATA that makes people go back to destinations. It's IATA. It's this club, this agreement that they have of how they're going to look after cargo and everything else.
Okay. So being a retired pilot, do you have any inside information? I can imagine that people all talk and gossip as they do in any industry about when things happen, incidents. The Singapore turbulence incident, was someone looking at their phone, reading a book, not looking out of the window or something else?
Yeah, well, we've got the first part has come out. The first part of the investigation has just come out. So the whole thing lasted 62 seconds.
Wow.
And it only went up and down about 150, 180 feet.
Right.
And of this, within the 62 seconds, a few things happened. So it was caused by convection, by a big cloud bubbling up underneath it, climbing up. This huge towering cumulonimbus clouds, which were forecast in the significant weather forecast.
Right.
It forecast jet streams. It forecast clear air turbulence areas. It said that in this area there was embedded, which means it was cloudy, they're flying in cloud, embedded cumulonimbus clouds climbing to 50,000 feet high. This is what happens around the equator. It's called the intertropical convergence zone, where the two atmospheres from the northern hemisphere and the southern hemisphere collide.
Okay.
So it's always very
tricky
for us. It takes about an hour and a half to get through when you're crossing the equator. And so these guys had one of these clouds come up underneath them, and it obviously took them by surprise. And that could be because the 777 has an auto feature for the weather radar. And really, you've got to be switching to manual every now and checking it out.
That's what I was saying. Like, why did it take them by surprise? You think
that's
it could be possibly because it was on auto as distinct from...
Well, and there's a lot of other planes, like maybe 30 other planes doing the same area, you know, and that didn't have any problems.
Right.
So question, why did they go anywhere near that? Because all the other planes are avoiding it.
Yeah.
Because they were checking their weather radars out.
Right.
Some planes have better weather radars, like the A380, for example.
But it's possible that it could have been an error.
It could have been an error. And so what happened was the airspeed increased and the altitude increased. Now, anyone who knows about physics says, well, if you're going up, you can't, you know, increase your speed. So obviously that was caused by convective turbulence. They played with the speed brakes and they actually disconnected the autopilot for 21 seconds. So a lot of this is probably pilot-induced turbulence, playing with the controls.
Oh, gosh.
Because the molecules are very, very far apart up there and you've got to be very smooth when you take the autopilot off.
Jeez, the pilot would be very disappointed with himself, just that he might have made some decisions that he's not happy with on reflection. Do you want to stay with us, James? We can come back after the 8:30 news and chat again. You're here and it's such a wealth of information. Can't wait to talk a little bit more. James Nixon is with us, retired pilot, author, and raconteur about the mayhem that happens in the sky. Our bumpy ride seems to have smoothed out on Disrupt.
This is Enterprise Breakfast with Libby Gore on Disrupt Radio.
James Nixon is with us. He is a former pilot. Do you like me saying former pilot for Emirates and Ansett? That Ansett thing, my friend Joe was telling me that when it all folded, like crews were actually pitted against each other for work and flight. Like it got quite Hunger Games at the end.
Well, it happened. I was stuck in Cairns when it went under the first time after 9/11. So we were stuck in Cairns. And remember,
did you get a call or like how were you told?
Yeah, Channel 7 rang me and asked to do an interview. And I said, yeah, if you can get your crew here. And they said, where are you? I said, Cairns. And they said, well, you're not coming home. I said, don't be stupid. We were told when we went to bed last night that everything was all right. They said, well, no, it's closed. So we got stuck in Cairns. But it was horrible because 23 airlines around the world went broke within a week because of 9/11, because the values of the assets were zero. Suddenly an airplane was worth nothing. You couldn't sell it, but you had these huge loans. So anyone who was trading insolvent had to go broke. So what happened for us was that...
You still say us.
Us. Well, we were at Cairns Airport trying to get home and a lady was there. Her brother was in the World Trade Center and she'd been talking to him when the tower collapsed.
Oh.
And so she was catatonic trying to get home or trying to get over to New York. And our cabin crew from Ansett also, we were stuck at the airport, took her under our wing and we got her to Brisbane with us and eventually she got off on her way to New York. So you sort of were a bit guilty to feel sorry for yourself because so many other people were going through such a hard time at the same time.
It sent shivers down my spine. Let's go through today's news, shall we? So Qantas are talking about a 22-hour flight to Europe and they're saying that they're on track to bring in some new things given that there are still delays. I was really surprised that all of the aeroplanes are kind of all made by the same people, whether it be Boeing or whether it be Airbus.
Airbus.
All got the same suppliers.
Well, yes, but there's a different philosophy with Airbus compared to Boeing, so there's a bit of difference there.
Which is?
Oh, the whole reason for being. You know, this situation with Singapore wouldn't have happened in an Airbus aeroplane because once it's in the cruise mode, it goes up and down up to 300 feet to deal with turbulence. So it doesn't have this violent maintaining the altitude hold, which is a problem with the older type of aeroplanes.
With older Boeings.
And so... there's many, many differences between Boeing and Airbus. But remember, Airbus was born, you were talking earlier about building things in different locations.
Yeah.
You know, this is the company that made Concorde.
Right.
And they've been making things in different locations for the A320 since 1985. And then the A330, then the A340, then the A380. So this is how they operate because it's all part of the EU, giving all parts of the EU parts of the business. So that's why it was so different for Boeing because they'd never done it before. It wasn't part of the way they grew up, their DNA.
Qantas says 22-hour flights to Europe is this headline. What do you think?
Well, when you went to Europe for the first time, how long did it take you?
I'm sure it took
22 hours.
Oh, did it?
Yeah, and you used to stop in Singapore.
So what? Why is this news?
Well, these planes, I don't know, maybe the plane's flying slowly, I'm not too sure. But it's a problem that Qantas has and that they've been, you know, they make the best ads in the world. And the thing about Australians is we love Qantas ads, but we fly with Singapore and Emirates.
Do we?
We do. And so they've got two slots in London every morning. They've got two slots, which could be A380s, which in their case is 489 seats. But they use one A380, the one from Sydney, and the one from Melbourne is a 787, a Dreamliner, which has only got 236 seats.
Right.
So if you're going to have the same number of passengers going on an A380 as a 787, you need two 787s, and then you still leave 17 people behind, but you need four pilots on each aeroplane. So that's the problem. The A380 is a game changer because you can have four pilots and you can have, in their case, 489 passengers. Right. On that one slot in London.
So we need the A380s.
We need the A380s, or Emirates has proven that they do, and that's how they make their money. If the A380s full up top, everything downstairs is profit and vice versa. So, and Tim Clark, the CEO of that, is now saying that we're going to have to spend $3 billion refurbishing them to make them last because Boeing hasn't been able to produce the 777X on time. But in terms of doing these Qantas flights, so these ultra-long haul flights, they want to use Australian fuel. So the thing is, if you can fuel the aeroplane up in Perth, which they do on that flight from Perth to London, you're buying it at Australian dollars. You don't use Australian cabin crew. You use contract cabin crew out of London. You bring them down, stick them in an Australian hotel on Australian dollars, and then you send them back again, rather than taking Australian cabin crew and buying Australian hotel rooms in London. Think about it.
Is it cheaper?
It's cheaper. Cheaper for them. But passengers, they like the A380 and they like the comfort. And they like the whole prestige of it all.
James, we'll have to get you back. You'll be our aeroplane commentator, won't you? Next profit.
Let me just tell you.
No, just very quickly.
Very quickly. How much money net profit do the airlines make per passenger experience? For the passenger walking on, how much money does that industry make out of them?
How much?
It used to be $5. It went up to about $10 in 2015 and 16, the most ever. It's back to $5 again.
Okay.
So you do a lot of work for a very small amount of profit.
James Nixon joining you, former pilot for Ansett and Emirates, our new regular aviation correspondent on Disrupt.